Hanging on, Phil. I eat boys for breakfast. Sure do. You are listening to the always fabulous Civic Media Radio Network. Go get that app. You can listen to the Packers. You can listen to the Brewers. Central Division. We're the champs, man. I was at the game last night. It was fabulous. It was so great. And guess who else was there? Matt Salmon, my special guest on October 2nd. The hour will be dedicated to all things Brewers. It's going to be fantastic. We're going to talk about the stadium. We might even have a couple of special guests popping into the show. I'm working on it, Anya. I'm working on it. But boy, it was a really special event yesterday to be there. This hasn't happened in a long time. We actually won our division. This is amazing. And it really, if you have never been to that kind of a baseball game, it's worth about four times the price of admission. Folks, we're so excited. It's great to see Milwaukee coming together. That, I mean, maybe the question for the day is going to be, what's your favorite thing about Milwaukee? I don't think the city gets near enough love. I have so many favorite things about Milwaukee. If you want to call me up and tell me what your favorite thing about my hometown is, 844-967-2789. But for my entire life, one of the things that always set Milwaukee apart, in my estimation, was the fandom of the folks here in Wisconsin's biggest city. We're great sports fans. There's a reason comedians will do and film their HBO specials here. It's because we're a great audience. We like to laugh. We like to have a good time. And I really think that good time vibe, that easy to laugh vibe, is a hallmark of Milwaukee. You know, folks really want some levity and light in their lives. And I love that about being from here. It really is a special place. My other favorite thing about Milwaukee has to be Brady Street. It is where you will see everybody from every possible walk of life all on one like six block strip of real estate here in Milwaukee. It is a gem. If you want to tell me what your favorite thing about Milwaukee is so that I end my week with you all on a high note, call me, text me, 844-967-2789. Yesterday, I got to break the news about the big old Trump summary judgment granting from a judge in New York State with the AG Letitia James's civil lawsuit, basically brought for business fraud for inflating the value of his assets. There are just a couple of asset values that I wanted to touch upon this afternoon, Anya, because I can't say it's just rich. I mean, pun intended, I guess. It's just rich. But there were three asset values that I was like, in increasing levels of funniness, I guess, in my view. So the first one is Seven Springs. It's this like mansion out there. I don't even know if they use it. I think they do. But yes, that was valued at, and get ready for this, $30 million by independent appraisers. What did Trump value that at? Just times that by 10. A factor of 10, basically $300 million. So that's $30 million to $300 million, because he's a real estate genius who sees things other people don't. Yeah, like lives on Mars and just makes up values for stuff. So that's a nearly $270 million valuation difference. I mean, give me a break. The other one, of course, is where he lives in his golden tower. Palace, 40 Wall Street. Independent appraisers put it at $540 million. He claimed it was north of $7.25 million. So that's another, I don't know, $200 million. I'm doing math on the radio. Woo! So we got $270 million plus $200 million in inflated assets. That's just across two properties. But the crown jewel, Anya, the greatest of all of the Trump exaggerations about his hand size, I mean, real estate value.
I was worried which tower you might talk about. Go ahead.
Yes, indeed. I'll give you a guess. Which property, if you were Donald Trump, which property would it be that you would be most inclined to inflate the value of?
And which two have we mentioned? The mansion.
We talked about Silver Springs. We talked about 40 Wall Street where he lived. What's his other like?
The only two I can think of would be, and I'm not sure if this is what 40 Wall Street is, would be Trump Tower or in New York or Mar-a-Lago. Those are the two that I could name. So those would have to be my guesses. Oh.
So it's nice when I ask you questions that you know the answer to, because one of the biggest exaggerations about his hand size, you're exactly right, Anya, is yes. Mar-a-Lago appraised value $18 million. I'll give you a guess, Anya.
Now, sorry, 18 was what the real
people came up with. Like the real people that live on planet Earth. Okay. And do maths where 2 + 2 = 4 and not 16.
Okay. Okay. I bet he's saying a hundred and eighty times 10. Is that around the number?
Oh, so this was that's good math. Cause like the first one that I started with was like a times 10. Then the other one was about the same absolute value number. But on the higher value, no, this $18 million property, according to Donald Trump, was worth $612 million.
Oh, my good graces. All right. All right. He's seeing a lot of things that aren't there. A lot of zeros that aren't there. All right.
Seeing a lot, of, you know, it's, I bet you, okay, I, raw speculation about, like, the mind and like physical environment in which Donald Trump exists, you know, where he's 6'4 and weighs 215.
Ah, yes. Okay. Neverland.
Like everything is worth 20 times what it actually is, right? I bet he's got mirrors that make him look skinnier.
Oh, like fun. Oh, like the mirrors they have in malls. So you buy the jeans and then you get home and you're like, why don't these fit? That's why. Yeah. Yes.
Those kinds of mirrors. I bet the lighting always makes him look tan and thin.
Yeah. That's how my apartment lighting should be, but I can't afford that. So
we can't afford that. Yeah.
I just have to squint and pretend. Lighting too.
I mean, like, can I get a visor? How do I make my nose look smaller on our YouTube feed with this studio lighting? You all don't know me or haven't met me. I got a honker. It's how I snurf out baloney. Yeah, so 18 times 34 is 612 million. 34 times. I wish I could do that anytime I needed a little credit line. I'll just make up numbers. How much money do I need to borrow? Okay, yeah. What's the net worth required to get to? Yep. That's the number. Hooey. Kind of ridiculous. I can probably come up with a whole lot of other like household features that are unique to the Donald Trump household. Right? It's just, there's a whole fridge stocked with Diet Coke. Just one. It's the Diet Coke fridge. Oh, it's the fifth food group. There's definitely a Diet Coke fridge. I bet he has his own restroom. Right? Because I can see Donald Trump saying, I don't want anyone else near my restroom, because he's so germ paranoid.
And I'll tell you what, if all he's drinking is Diet Coke and eating Big Macs, I don't think I'd want to be near his bathroom. I think if I was Melania, I'd let him have his own. Oh yes, you can have that one. That's yours.
One on every floor, one like every 150 feet, right? Yeah. You would have to.
Yep.
In any case, I digress. I'm not going to spend any more of today's show talking about the asset values that underlie the fraud, basically conviction. It's a civil case, but the fraud finding in New York, there'll be more to come on that. But those 18 million to 612 million, that's some math, man. Woo! In any case, here's what I want to talk about today, amongst other things, is the government shutdown that is going to happen on Sunday. If you want to call me and tell me that the government shutdown ain't going to happen and you know the deal that's going to be cut, woo, please call me, 844-967-2789. But I'll take any and all comers or callers about your impressions, gut instincts about the shutdown. If you agree with me that the shutdown's going to happen, how do we get out of it? Right? Like, if they can't cut this deal now, like, how long does this have to go? Now, a couple of bits of facts for context. It's going to take me a minute to find this. So we've had approximately 21 government shutdowns since 1976. So this isn't a rare occurrence by any stretch, sort of in modern political history. But the last one was in 2018, and it was the longest and the worst one. I think all of us will remember this. And that one lasted for 34 days. That's a month. It created some pain. It created some acute pain. I'm going to talk a little bit about the sort of economic, macroeconomic impacts that it had. But let's just accept as true that the economy is much more fragile now than it was in 2018. Remember the good old days in 2018? Before COVID, before you had ever worn a face mask in public, before George Floyd was murdered before our eyes. You know, when basically there was some impeachment talk about, you know, bribing a foreign power, but mostly we were worried about Stormy Daniels and payments to porn stars and his incompetent EPA chief. Yeah. Oh, the bad good old days, Anya, 2018. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the economy is way more fragile now than it was back then. And there were still some really significant macroeconomic impacts on our country's economy, even from that time. So a lot of what you're hearing from economists, analysts, and even from the White House is that we're much more concerned. So in part, let's just be clear about this, right? If you want to talk about my oft-used phrase, performative politics, I can't think of anything more that would be a more apt example of performative politics than what you've got going on right now in McCarthy's House of Representatives and that fun group we all know and love, the Freedom Caucus. Wow, we're going to talk about it when we come back. I've got the list of all the ones that are the problem for McCarthy. We're going to, you know, work out some hypotheticals about what might happen next. I'm Maggie Dawn. Join us, 844-967-2789. Wednesday edition of the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. You can join the conversation, all things government shutdown, here this afternoon, 844-967-2789. So an oft-used phrase of mine is performative politics. I hate it whether it comes from the right or the left. This is not to say that I don't acknowledge and embrace that politics is theater. Of course it is. But performative politics, in my construction, consists of one of two things. They can also exist simultaneously. A politician is engaging in some sort of usually highly theatrical, very rhetorically, you know, flamboyant position or stand that either has no chance of success or is utterly beside the point, is merely symbolic, whatever it is. It's not going to amount to a hill of beans. And they're doing it for one of two reasons. The first one is simply to make it all about them. Headline grabbing. Pay attention to me, 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 over here, me, 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 me. Yeah, make it all about me. Second option is they're doing it because by doing whatever the performative act is, they are able to exert some sort of extreme power asymmetry. So the performative politics is the exertion of power for power's sake, not because it's going to lead to any substantive change in law or any sort of important policy outcome, but it is the exertion of political power simply because one can. And by that construction, the entire House Freedom, that is the entire House Freedom Caucus. It's just a self-aggrandizing exercise in juvenility, which has been fairly successful at creating some power asymmetries, and they're leveraging them, right? And it is at another element that I should probably put in there. It's probably necessary, but not sufficient for performative politics, is that by doing so, by either self-aggrandizing in this way or the exercise of these power asymmetries, actual harm is being wrought. It can be emotional harm and whomever you're using as your punching bag. It could be, you know, government shut down 800,000 federal employees that won't get a paycheck for however long it lasts. But usually there's some very real negative consequence, which you're ignoring because it serves yourself. And I think, isn't this why we all hate government? I mean, if you ask a normal person, why is it that you hate government? And if you want to call me up and tell me, please do. And I work in government. But if you ask the average person, why is it that you hate government? There's usually, oh, they're crooked, blah, 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 blah. Once you get past all of that stuff, it's that they don't believe that the elected official there actually is working in their interest. They believe they've been bought and sold, and failing that, that the politician is just working for themselves. And of course, gerrymandering has only made this much, much worse, because now elected officials are completely unaccountable, right? Well, I'll always win re-election. And if I go further extreme, I just appeal to this crazy base on the right and the left. Worse on the right. Not false equivalencies, let's not do that. Worse on the right, but it happens on the left too. And so when you create such extremely deep, deep red districts and some blue ones, what is there to check that impetus to serve oneself, to allow one to be bought and sold? And I think that's part of the, like, when you look at these members of the House Freedom Caucus, it's like almost to a one. Not qualified to hold the job, probably don't actually understand a whit about how government works, basically want to burn government down to the ground, and are simply there because they get to stand atop the hill and play King of the Mountain for a while and scream out loud, and people are paying attention to them. They're not there to fix anything or do anything. And so here we're going to shut down all of federal government for gosh knows how long, because about seven adults who signed up, raised their hand and ran for federal governmental office basically would rather act like spoiled children than actually go about the business of governing. And the rest of their entire GOP cohorts are going to actually go about the complete theater and artifice of impeaching Joe Biden while the government shuts down. I don't want any of us to ever miss this point. They are going to shut the government down while they get busy impeaching Joe Biden because his son was a screw up. I mean, Eric Trump, anybody? If that was the only condition to impeachment, there should be a third Trump impeachment. I don't mean to make light. But this is where we're at. Seven silly, self-serving, spoiled brats are going to hold the entire U.S. government hostage, and their party is going to let them. If you are on the line, stay there. I see you all. Please join the conversation, 844-967-2789. I'm going to tell you a little bit about some of the technical rules, what exactly a continuing resolution is, and what some of the potential outcomes could be here when we come back. Keep it locked, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Come join us. The water's warm, 844-967-2789. I can take you home. back, everybody. It is the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I do want to give a shout out to some of the texters yesterday. I didn't get to them. Many of you have a very dirty sense of humor vis-a-vis Mr. Tim Scott. But I appreciate the jokes. If you want to know what we're having a laugh about, you got to check out the podcast of the Maggie Dawn Show, available by clicking on the Civic Media app and moving to the website, and you look at all the shows. Go get the app. It's so convenient. You can get it from any place that you like to get your favorite apps. Okay, returning to topic. Before the shutdown, though, I got to drop a couple other Trump property valuations just because that seems how I'm going to, you know, start my long segments of this afternoon. So I got three more for you in ascending order of hilarity. And then we're going to go to the phones. Join our conversation, 844-967-2789. So the Trump National Golf Club in Los Angeles, $16 million actual value. Trump imaginary fantasyland value, $56.6 million. Gotta love it. Briarcliff, the now infamous Briarcliff, which is where Trump was busy jetting back and forth to and fro with Mar-a-Lago when he was having his people hide those documents, those pesky documents. Briarcliff, $16.5 million assessed value, or appraised value, I should say. Trump made up value, $73.4 million. The last one was one of the Trump residential, like Trump Tower properties. I forget the exact address. $750,000 per unit. Per unit, okay. He inflated the overall value of that building by 700%. 700%. I mean, you know, as the saying goes, if you're going to lie, like lie real big, because
yeah,
how does someone, well, no, it's not. Well, I say it is. The number's just so enormous. Anywho, had to share some fun facts. Let's go to the phones. Joanne from Madison, I'm always happy to see your name on my caller list. What say you this afternoon?
Thanks for the kind words. You've got a great show going. I'm going to add to it a sad note, though, because during the shutdown, what happens is that a number of scientific experiments, sustainability and environmental observation ports and all of that is shut down if it's not considered essential. And a lot of them are not considered essential. So I know people who routinely work internationally giving information on whatever currents of air we have and all this other stuff that's going on in crops. All of those folks have their work shut down. Basically, when somebody asks them a question, there was a little message that pops up on the screen saying, I can't work because I've been furloughed because a bunch of Republican diehards decided to implement their egregious policies. That's what that's, well, or something like that. It's probably more formal than what I just said. So it does take a science nerd to know that you need people to handle these data and to make these experiments and you know, things like hurricanes and tornadoes and all these climate occurrences, we can't help because of this. So thank you so much.
Really appreciate the point, Joanne. Let me get right to that and flesh it out some more. So what Joanne is talking about is what exactly in federal government functions shuts down when a government shutdown happens. So the federal government has just over 2 million employees, give or take. 800,000 of them end up not working. And they aren't paid during this period of time. They're furloughed. And so what happens? The first thing that happens is nearly 1 million people, plus all of the contractors. So I don't have an estimated number on the contractors, but all of the, it's probably near 2 million people in the United States, basically have no cash flow until the shutdown is over. That means they stop spending. Guess what is not good when your economy is trying to avoid a recession? 2 million people not spending. It's not good, okay? But what about the actual functions within government? Well, SNAP food benefits, that's somehow not administered during a shutdown. So the White House estimates that 7 million women and children will lose access to food. That is because the contingency fund that funds SNAP benefits ends up running out of money within a couple of days. All the parks and museums shut down. That is a huge deal in states whose economies are completely dependent on the parks and museums. So think about Wis Vegas, Wisconsin Dells, right? Like if you just shut down all of the amusement, like no one would go there, which means all of the people that are employed there, they're not making any money. None of the restaurants are, none of the hotel, like it all goes away. That has trickled down, for those of you that remember the 80s, trickling down economic impacts. Bad, very bad. Oh, yes. Guess what also stops? All of your federal government inspections of your food supply, the water, the air, manufacturing plant inspections, all OSHA inspections, chemical plant testing, all of this stuff stops. The FDA doesn't approve any new drugs. Patent office shuts down. Head Start program ends up shutting down. Immunization programs, not essential, many of them. Small business loans, yeah, those won't get processed, not essential. And training for critical non-defense security positions in our government. So think air traffic controllers, all those training programs shut down. The federal government, just like every other sector in the U.S. economy, is facing labor shortages. So when you shut down the supply of new air traffic controllers, yeah, that's not good. Not good. And of course, as Joanne so aptly described, basically the entire scientific research apparatus stops. And so there's all kinds of government, non-government, and business sector, private sector users of U.S. governmental data, which despite all indications to the contrary, is a data gold standard in the world of data geeks. And what key bit of information, what key bits of information is really important right now when the Federal Reserve is trying to make decisions about whether or not to raise the interest rates? Yeah, it's all of that governmental data about consumer spending, the confidence indicator, the Bureau of Labor Statistics. So let me be clear here. As we're trying to avoid economic slowdown, a government shutdown will rob the Federal Reserve of the very data that it needs to determine whether to raise interest rates. In other words, we'll be doing monetary supply policy and other macroeconomic policy blind in the United States. Everybody feel good about that? Everybody? Matt Gaetz? Yep, you good with the Federal Reserve? A thumbs up on the Federal Reserve making interest rates adjustments without any usable, good, reliable data. Super. Mm-hmm. Excellent. Here are some things that keep going. The USPS, the DOJ, prosecutions continue. So those of you misguided folks out there, Matt Gaetz, is that you? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, Mr. Gaetz, Mr. Misguided. Yes. That doesn't mean that the Donald Trump prosecutions will shut down. The TSA continues. Most of the military apparatus continues. Medicare will continue to be paid, so will Social Security benefits. But DHHS would shut down to about 50%, 58% of its workforce. That is a huge social services safety net for our country's most vulnerable folks. So our family members, veterans, older folks, people with special needs, all those kinds of folks, they're going to see massive service cuts. But lest I forget this little ditty. Hey, Anya, would you be surprised to know that an amendment to the Constitution guarantees that even during a government shutdown, when, you know, a huge swath, nearly half of the federal government workforce isn't getting paid, guess what this little constitutional amendment does? Guess who's guaranteed to get paid even if there is a shutdown?
Well, I would sure hope it said something like all the workers in America, but Would I guess, you know, it's maybe our elected officials continue to get paid while the whole rest of the country shuts down? Is that it, Maggie?
Yes, Anya. Yes. Ding, ding, ding. You're 2 for 2 today. Very
I'm
impressive.
Winning. Yay.
You got an A. Yes. Yeah, the 27th Amendment basically says that no law may, quote, vary the compensation for services of senators and representatives, end quote. And this is a fun little footnote. I hope everybody's taking notes because these are little U.S. government factoids. Their salaries, the salaries of senators and members of the House of Representatives, their salaries are funded through a permanent appropriations account. The source of their salaries, which are paid no matter what, is also funded by a permanent appropriations account and isn't subject to congressional budgetary quims.
That's so nice for them.
It must be.
Yeah.
I mean, like, no matter how corrupt and bad at your job you are, Matt Gaetz, is that you? Is that you in the back that I see with your hand up? Yeah, no, like, yep, you still get paid. I mean, it's pretty incredible. So here's the list of names. I'd be remiss if I didn't share all the folks that are going to shut our government down for gosh knows how long. Andy Ogles, Republican from Tennessee. These are all Republicans. Matt Gaetz, obviously, Florida. Tim Burkett, Republican, Tennessee. Anna Paulina Luna, Republican, Florida. Eli Crane, Arizona. Matt Rosendale, Montana. Andy Biggs, he's sort of the ringleader. Arizona, Dan Bishop, North Carolina, Wesley Hunt, Texas, Corey Mills, Florida. I just want you to know who to blow up on the socials. You know what I'm saying? And I would be also remiss if I failed to take this moment to observe back, lo, so many months now, to June, when the debt ceiling debate was happening. And back then, I said, after the deal was done, don't worry, everybody. They'll screw it up come October, too. That the debt ceiling negotiation, and particularly how ticked off all the House Freedom Caucus members were, that was going to make it even harder for McCarthy to whip his caucus and actually do something about the government appropriations process and bill. So we all called it back then. But the other thing that I want to remind us about from that time is that Matt Gaetz said, why would we ever give up our hostage? And the hostage that he was referring to when he said that was the economy and the well-being of every single American citizen. That was the hostage. And I spent a long time in June talking about what the impacts of the U.S. defaulting on its debt would be. And they are much more acute and come much more quickly than what occurs in a shutdown. But make no mistake, the hostage remains the well-being of the American people. That's what the House Freedom Caucus members are playing chicken with in the halls of Congress. I'll be back with more in a moment. How much time do we have left? We still have a minute. Oh, we got a whole minute. I had that nice whole conclusion there baked in.
I was wondering why you were wrapping up so fast.
You're like, no, Maggie, don't wrap up.
Keep going, keep going.
Yeah, keep going. But that really truly is what is occurring here. And the longer that the shutdown goes on, the more acute the economic pain. Goldman Sachs put the cost on a week-over-week basis in basically loss of economic gain, so a slowing down of the economy, and we're losing about 0.2% of our GDP per week during a governmental shutdown. That is about all of our well-beings, and that matters. When we come back, I want to close out the hour by talking about what we learned from the 2018 shutdown and how what we're facing here could be much more dire. Back with more in a moment. I'm Maggie Dawn. Join us, 844-967-2789. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Join us for our last segment. I'm talking all things government shutdown, 844-967-2789. So back in 2018, we had the longest federal government shutdown ever in our nation's history. Back then, and we now know because we've got the economic data that was actually calculated, the real GDP loss per week was at about 0.13%. Overall GDP was lower by 0.1% in the fourth quarter following the shutdown in 18. It was down by 0.2% in the first quarter of 19. What does that mean in real dollars? There's $3 billion in losses. That was in a pretty healthy economy. It will be far worse today. And again, why? Like, none of the stuff that the wackadoo Freedom Caucus people are talking about, none of that's going to pass the Senate, and they all know it. It's like, why are you doing this? Well, the obvious answer to that is because it's going to hurt Joe Biden. You take a fragile economy and you shake it around a little bit. You know, that's what it's all about. It's the hokey pokey with the American economy. And it's performative politics. It's self-aggrandizing. It's the use of power for no other purpose than to use power. And here's some of the, like, nasty bits that they've put into. Now they're trying to do, like, individual appropriations bills. That's what they've been trotting out. But, like, you never get through all of them before shutdown on Sunday. So that's baloney. And here's what one of those, like, way far right Freedom Caucus appropriations bills that they proposed had snuck into it. They're going to reduce the salary of Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin III to a dollar. He's the first black man to ever hold the job. I'm going to say this one again. In one of the House Freedom Caucus's appropriations bills that they know has a snowball's chance in hell of ever actually being enacted, that they're going through these motions of performative politics to make themselves feel good so that they can shut the government down. Yeah, they wanted to sneak in into one of those bills that the Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin III confirmed just a little while ago, despite Tuberville's antics. Yeah, they're going to reduce his salary to a dollar. He's the first black man to hold the job. And I forgot to mention, like, the largest number of federal government contractors aren't, like, fancy consultants. They're the people that work in the cafeterias that clean the houses of Congress, I should say, and help maintain them. Those working poor folks, yeah, they won't get paid.
There's not to mention, you got to think of, like, the people, because this affects national parks, no?
Of course.
Yeah, people whose job it is to walk around in the sun all day, now they can't do that and they can't get paid. It's just, it touches every corner of the country. It's crazy.
Well, and then it just, if you, and not being cheeky at all of those people that support tourist economies, right,
yep,
which are,
yep,
you know, people that work in cleaning services and all, you know, restaurant workers and all that stuff. I mean, it's just so, so bad. Mark from the SAC, got to give you some airtime here, my friend. What say you this fine afternoon?
Well, it's just kind of ridiculous that this is going on. I mean, and looking at the Constitution, I mean, do congressional staff members get paid? Because because they're not actually senators or representatives, so, you know, maybe, you know, that none of their staff should actually be getting paid during the shutdown. And I don't, and maybe they go, well, that's the services of them, and that's included in their services. I don't think so. That it is just ridiculous that this is happening at this point in time. I mean, that I just have to wonder, that a little humor injected here. I wonder if Matt Gaetz is actually the love child of the Twilight Zone's Canemit, that from that old episode, To Serve Man, where human beings are just, it was a cookbook, is what they came up with.
Oh, listen, Mark, when I need some random arcana, I turn to you, my friend. You are always educating and entertaining. Thanks so much for calling. I don't know the answer to his question, though. My assumption is that some congressional staff do continue to get paid because they actually still need to negotiate a spending bill to restart government. And let's be honest, elected officials don't actually, most of them don't do any of the work. It's all the staff that does the work. So a couple of very quick ideas about what might be a possible deal. So there's a group that's literally called the Problem Solvers in the House. It's a group of 32 Dems and 32 Republicans. They've been working on a compromise framework. It's pretty basic. It would give Congress until January 11th to pass 12 appropriation bills to fund the government through September 30th, 2024. The funding would be set at, so like the total overall spending for discretionary would be $1.59 trillion. That's the number that was negotiated to raise the debt ceiling back in June. So abiding by the agreement that President Biden and Speaker McCarthy reached. It would also grant Biden's request for additional Ukraine funding. We are working to get the Russia expert back from UW-Madison to give us an update. Of course, everyone knows we need to help continue to fund Ukraine. It would have that baked in, and to address the debt issue that is so near and dear to Republicans, except under the Trump administration, $8 trillion more in debt. Just a reminder there, most of any presidency. To address the debt problem, it would set up a new commission to work to address ways to stabilize long-term deficits and debt. The problem there, of course, is that you need Democrats to vote for it. You basically need like most of the Democrats, if not all of them, to vote for that. And that creates a different problem for McCarthy. And that's because he's already been threatened by his rightmost flank, right? Like Matt Gaetz leaving hey, let's fire McCarthy paperwork in the men's room. Real slick. Hey, Matt, is that you? Did you leave that in the bathroom? Yeah, I did. Uh-huh. I mean, that's what we've come to. We just leave notes in the bathroom for one another. And they're not going to agree to that. So, like, the things that he would need to compromise to get full Democratic support will tank it from the Freedom Caucus members. And remember, like, if you see a motion to vacate, which is how they fire Kevin McCarthy, all the Democrats will vote for it. Only four Republicans have to vote for that motion to vacate, and he's gone. So I don't know how he's going to fight his way out of this. There's also an old bill that they may try to trot out as sort of a continuing resolution, but it doesn't solve the problem because it's just a shell, and eventually you have to fill in the details. So on and on we go. Seven House members are going to hold the American public hostage and put all of our best interests on the back burner while they engage in some performative politics. I'll be back next week, everybody. Thanks for listening.